Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs, where we've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, sounding not like a frog anymore.
Well,
but as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how does it feel to be in the presence of somebody who's not a frog?
I wouldn't be able to answer that for you, Kyle, because you still are frogish in nature. If not in voice, in spirit, mind, and body, you're still kind of a frog. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I guess so. Living my tadpole life or whatever frogs do. I don't know.
Well, they stop. Once they're frogs, they're not tadpoles. But they essence still has to be there. Like, you still have streaks of how you were as a child.
Yeah.
I'm sure it applies for frogs, even though they have a different limb count. Something to think about, that's for
Something
sure.
Something to think about. Well, other things to think about. Did you watch anything in the last week?
Well, we did. We watched a movie together.
Sure
but
did.
But before I get to that, I got a surprise twist for you, Kyle.
Oh, boy.
I've been fucking reading.
Oh,
books.
No way.
Novels.
How do you even manage that?
You know what? I've been bored enough. Games haven't captured my attention. And I found that I just like a little read before I go to bed.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what did you even read in then?
Well, the first one, I should have dropped this like 2 episodes ago, but I didn't even think about it. It's called Power Play, Professional Hockey and the Politics of Urban Development.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a book written about the process that the Oilers Entertainment Group went into to build the arena in the city and like how backroom shady and the negotiations with the city are. It was interesting. One word I would describe it is dense. It is like 400-ish pages, and it covers over like a year of time, like two-ish years, three maybe.
That's
so wild. It's like you're getting the play-by-play to the second of this thing. I mean, it was pretty interesting though. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
The second book that I read was When to Rob a Bank by the guys who wrote Freakonomics. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the book and or podcast series.
I am not.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Now, as advertised, it was just like a collection of their blog posts that they've written after the book got big.
Right.
Because they wrote like a really cool book on like economics and people behavior and whatnot. And then I saw that they also wrote this. I'm like, well, Freakonomics is cool. I'll read this. But instead of it being like a research-driven presentation of the human mind, it was like four guys and their thoughts that they put into a blog post and then put into a book. So it was okay.
Okay.
It wasn't as intriguing to other things, but it was all right. For things that we've actually watched, though, you and I went to a whole ass movie.
We sure did.
And I'm blanking on it. What did we even watch?
We went to Steven Spielberg's The Fablemans.
Right. And you know what? I liked it.
I liked it too.
I had a good time watching it. It's kind of like a sit back. It's not particularly difficult to get through. It's not wrought with drama or intrigue. I mean, obviously there is some tension in the storyline.
Yeah.
There are some issues being at play, but you're never going to be on the edge of your seat or like an emotional. I mean, maybe there'll be a moment or two where you're really sad or happy, but like, it's not going to be difficult to get through. It's kind of a sit back, easy breezy watch, and I had fun with it.
Yeah, it is kind of light and fluffy in a lot of ways, but like the craft behind it is incredible. Obviously Steven Spielberg's a master of this, but like you can tell like he was putting a lot into it because it is kind of his personal story.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of probably pent up emotions from his childhood of his family life and how that impacted his love for filmmaking and his sort of like journey through there. And it was so fascinating to watch, but I just found it really easy to watch.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was like that challenging. And I also wouldn't say it was like the best thing I saw all year either.
No, like this is definitely, I don't think it's going to get a lot of like deep Oscar pushes. It might get like, I don't know, like a directing or a cinematography or something. But I don't think it's going to be best original screenplay. Oh, would it qualify because it's kind of based on other stuff?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm not sure. There's no like original source material other than like a real person's life. So I think it's original screenplay.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, I could see it getting nominated for a lot of that stuff. Like, I could easily see it being nominated for Best Picture, easily. In a year of, like, 10, this is easily one of the best 10, probably. And with that, I could see Steven Spielberg, because it is about his life, being nominated along with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could see there being, like, a package here. As far as acting, like, I think it's Michelle Williams. I think it was his mom. And she was really great. Paul Dano is great and everything, but he's not given like the most to do.
No, it was actually like, I was surprised by how reserved his role was.
Yeah. And there's like one scene really with their like uncle played by Judd Hirsch that I know a lot of people are talking about because that one bit just with his uncle is like, he gives a great performance in that.
Scene. It's fun.
Yeah, it's a really fun scene. And I think it's probably the most fun scene in the movie. and he really brings a lot of energy to that. And so you could maybe make an argument that he could get a supporting actor nomination, even though he's not really in it that much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see at the end of the year. I have yet to really see the best picture, I think. I don't know. Like, if this wins best picture, I'll be like, okay, that's fine, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know if I have yet to see the best picture, unless we're talking Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I think is still in the conversation, but mm-hmm. that's still, like, the best thing I've seen all year. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I would be kind of underwhelmed with this getting best picture, but I wouldn't be upset by any means, because it is still, like, a very good movie.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't, like, an exciting movie. It's not something I'm going to get pumped about. I'm not like, oh, fuck yeah, Fablemans!
Yeah,
like, exactly. When we got Coda won last year, mm-hmm. that was, like, that was our special child.
that was our special
child. We have a connection to that. We've done multiple, we did a podcast episode on that.
Yeah, it was fun to watch that one go. But with this one, like, even like last year, West Side Story, I thought was a lot more exciting than this one. Like, obviously, West Side Story didn't have like kind of the same sort of backing in mm-hmm. terms of like this being about his life and, you know, that sort of having an impact on this. But like, I found like it was way more exciting to watch in parts with West Side Story.
It was. But you can also go more extreme with West Side Story because it's like a known work, you can kind of stretch the boundaries of it. Whereas like, you can't really go as extreme while trying to keep it to be truthful, because it did feel like everything that happened in that movie, minus like names, probably did happen to Spielberg. So it doesn't stretch the imagination and doesn't have the liberty to either. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but no, it was good. It's a good time. Yeah.
What have you watched otherwise?
Other than that, I watched all of Andor, which is the new Star Wars show that I had been kind of putting off until, like, I guess, like, it just finished. I wasn't going week to week with it, but I heard it was really good, and so I finally got around to watching it. And yeah, it's really good. It's created by Tony Gilroy, which we know from Michael Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell there's a lot of great, almost political writing behind that. And, like, it's such a unique piece of Star Wars media, because there's nothing like lightsabery or the force involved in it. It is just about guys in either the rebellion side or on the Empire side going about their business to like achieve their goals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like the spark of the rebellion and Andor starting to kind of become this rebel that will eventually go on to, you know, deal with the Death Star and that sort of thing. I found the writing really interesting and the performance is really great. But like it's more adult in a lot of ways mm-hmm. because of just how deep the conversations are that these people are having and how complicated the emotion is and the choices that they're making. Really interesting show. So yeah. I really liked it. Is it like as exciting as something like The Mandalorian? No, but it is like so well done. And I really liked watching it. Yeah, it's good.
Interesting.
Good recommend. Yeah. But yeah, other than that, I didn't watch anything else other than the movie we're talking about this episode. Of course, season 3 of Snubs and Duds is covering the films for you, 2001. So for episode 18, we were talking about Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Pretty sure last time I wrote itch and I made you say that, but I'm just going to say that you fucked up. It's your fault. You said itch.
I'm glad you brought that up, because if you didn't, I was going to, because we have like a spreadsheet that lists all the movies, and I saw that you edited itch to inch.
Yes.
But you left it in the script from last week, so I could still see there that you wrote itch, and I, a loyal, hardworking co-host, would never rise to challenge what you've written on a piece of paper. So I said Hedwig and the Angry Itch.
Yep.
Listener, it's my fault. I'm so sorry. I'm a bad boy. Yep. Clearly, I should have known, and I didn't. And it is also funny that that's a mistake made in the movie to demonstrate not knowing. Because when they did that, I said like, ah, damn it. We have to address this now. That's not one we let slide at that point.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where I mix this up. I think I just assumed angry itch made more sense mm-hmm. because like, you know, you get an angry itch sometimes. It's just fucking super itchy.
I had one on my back the last couple of days and it's been infuriating. I could see a movie being made about that.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's Harry Potter's owl and how itchy he was. And that was the premise of this movie.
You have to imagine that even though their necks can turn an insane degree, there's no way those wings or those like feet talons are scratching their whole body.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
Not. So
and feathers have to get rustled and itchy constantly.
Yeah. So when this ended up being about a drag queen with an inch long penis.
Well, the remains of penis.
So yeah, that was interesting.
But I mean, not too far off. That's kind of like an owl who can't scratch.
Had you seen or heard of this before, either this or the rock musical it was based on?
No, nothing. I knew about it at all, to the point where when I turned it on, I didn't know it was a musical.
Oh.
And then it was because there's music.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
I didn't really know much about it. When I saw that it was so well reviewed, I started looking into it a little bit. And so I do know that it was kind of an off-Broadway show. And then it did go to Broadway and Neil Patrick Harris was in on Broadway for a bit. But it's mostly been in stage until they made this like a few years after it was off-Broadway, but before it went on Broadway.
Interesting.
So yeah. And so like I did notice when I was watching it how showy it is.
Very much so.
You could tell this is a musical and in some ways it might have been better as like a stage performance.
Yes.
But we'll get into that. If you're interested in this film or the rock musical it was based on, I've included links to physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen Hedwig and the Angry Inch yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it. Hedwig and the Angry Inch is a 2001 American musical comedy drama film written for the screen and directed by John Cameron Mitchell. It is based on Mitchell and Stephen Trask's 1998 stage musical of the same name. This stars John Cameron Mitchell as Hedwig Robinson / Hansel Smit, Andre Martin as Phyllis Steen, Hedwig's manager, Michael Pitt as Tommy Speck / Tommy Gnosis, and Miriam Shore as Yitzhak. It has a runtime of 92 minutes. Ooh, ah.
Oh,
perfect runtime.
Chef's kiss. Also compliments to that chef for his kiss.
And it released on September 12th, 2001. Jason, what do you think of Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
Okay. I watched it on like Wednesday, I think.
Yeah.
And then I gave it some space on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then I just like wanted to learn about it today. Mm-hmm. So I watched, there was like a documentary on YouTube that's actually pretty cool the making of the movie and about the rock musical. Mm. And why I wanted to learn more about that is because I wanted to put myself and understand that in 2001, this is probably groundbreaking in a number of ways. Mostly drag's not as big as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And rock operas aren't as big. Well, I don't know if they're big, but like they've never been smaller. So I don't know. Either way, this is definitely like pushing the boundaries of both like drag, music, and movies.
Yeah.
So I wanted to try and understand that because after I watched the movie on Wednesday, I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I think the best parts of this movie aren't aided by it being a movie. What I'd messed up is I didn't know this was a musical.
Right.
So I didn't have a chance to tell my girlfriend to come watch this with me. So it's also she could like guest on it because she likes musicals.
Yeah,
she would
yeah,
be
yeah.
really into that.
Yeah.
She has actually seen the show.
Oh, okay.
The rock opera itself and not the movie.
Yeah.
So that would have been a really cool perspective to have.
Right.
I didn't find out that she had seen that till in passing. I mentioned what we were doing today as I was like getting ready to leave. So I'm like, shit, she's busy tonight. We couldn't make it work. Damn it. So yeah, I think there's some really cool parts about this. But none of it was benefited by the movie format.
I agree. I think this is a really good advertisement for the show.
Yes.
Like, I really would like to see the show in person, like, as a live performance, because I think it could be a really cool live performance. The songs are great. Like, they got a lot of great energy to them, and you could tell that they would work really well on stage. I just agree. I don't think, as, like, a movie, this necessarily works in the movie format. And they do a lot of cool things. Like, there's, like, cool animation pieces, and they do some sort of kind of experimental camera work and editing that adds to the flavor of it. And when they're doing a lot of backstory stuff, you can tell that they were using their tools to the best of their ability that maybe they couldn't do on stage, like flashing back to them as a child and showing the whole space of his life. And especially that scene with the guy with all the candy bars and the gummy bears, like the scenery of that, they clearly probably couldn't do that on a stage performance, at least to that extent. And so they did use the tools of having it be a movie when they could, but I do think that it falls short of being a movie, but it's still like fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I like the character. Like Hedwig's an interesting character.
Very cool story behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but that character has an interesting backstory and arc to it that I really appreciated.
Well, do you want to get to the plot?
Yeah, let's read through plot.
All right, Jason's going to read straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Hansel Schmidt is a gay East German teenager who loves rock music and is stuck in East Berlin until he meets Sergeant Luther Robinson, an American soldier. Luther proposes marriage to Hansel, persuading him to change his sex in order to leave communist East Germany for the West as his wife, as that was the only legal solution. Hansel's mother, Hedwig, gives her child her name and passport and finds a doctor to perform a genital surgery. The operation is botched, however, leaving Hansel, now Hedwig, with a dysfunctional one-inch mound of flesh between her legs, aka the titular Angry Inch. Hedwig goes to live in Junction City, Kansas as Luther's wife. On their first wedding anniversary, Luther leaves Hedwig for a man. That same day, it is announced that the Berlin Wall has fallen and East Germans are flooding freely into the West. Hedwig recovers from the separation by confidently accepting her identity as a woman, picking up some odd jobs, and returning to her first love of music by forming a rock band composed of Korean-born army wives. Babysitting for the commander of the nearby fort, she befriends Tommy Speck, a shy and misunderstood teenager questioning his Christian upbringing. For 6 months, she teaches him rock history, lyrics, grooming, and vocal training, taking him from playing the occasional guitar masses to the two of them outgrossing monster trucks in Wichita. Hedwig gives him the stage name Tommy Gnosis, stating that Gnosis is the Greek word for knowledge. For his graduation, upon discovering her inch, Tommy leaves Hedwig and goes on to become a wildly successful rock star by stealing Hedwig's songs. Hedwig and her band, the Angry Inch, now composed of Eastern Europeans, including her husband, Yitzhak, are forced to support themselves by playing in a chain of failing seafood restaurants called Bilgewater's and other small venues. Hedwig is following Tommy's tour while pursuing a copyright lawsuit. In between songs, she reflects on her life story through flashbacks and stories told directly to either uninterested restaurant patrons or her small but loyal group of fans. Throughout the film, Hedwig refers to Aristophanes' speech in Plato's Symposium. This myth, retold by Hedwig in the song The Origin of Love, explains that human beings were once round, two-faced, four-armed, and four-legged beings. Angry gods split these early humans in two, leaving the separated people with a lifelong yearning for their other half. Near the end of the film, Hedwig is down and out, her band and manager having abandoned her in disgust after she tears up Yitzhak's passport. While working as a streetwalker, she finally reunites with Tommy and they reconcile. After the two of them accidentally drive Tommy's limo into a news truck, paparazzi burst onto the scene. Hedwig becomes famous and Gnosis' popularity tanks. Reunited with her band, Hedwig performs at Times Square, culminating in a violent removal of her drag. Now in male form, Hedwig discovers herself alone in front of Tommy on a huge stage. Tommy sings to Hedwig, pleading forgiveness and saying goodbye. She realizes that she created her other half from within herself. Hedwig then finds herself back at Times Square, but the space seems transformed with ambient white lighting. The band members, dressed all in white, are already in their places on stage. Hedwig gives Yitzhak her blonde wig, allowing Yitzhak to take her place, and sings in solidarity with all the misfits and losers of the world. A brief animated sequence symbolizing the union of the separated platonic halves leads to the final shot. Hedwig walking down a dark alley and onto the street naked. And that is Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah. I thought the ending was really impactful. I really liked the whole scene where kind of from Times Square onwards, I thought that was really well shot and really, you know, powerful to watch, which is kind of unfortunate that it came after a long period of just kind of like some backstory. But I did think it left you on like a pretty interesting and impactful note. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. I did feel like the pacing of the movie wasn't benefited from having these really obvious cuts in between songs with those interlaced. It kind of made it a little choppy going through things, which like you accept at a musical.
Yeah.
But in a movie, the flow did feel kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Hedwig's performance, though? What was it?
John Cameron Mitchell.
Yes.
Yeah. Incredible. They're like, they clearly know a lot, or they've clearly done this role a lot. This is kind of their project from like writing, and they were the first off-Broadway performer for it. And so this is clearly a character that means a lot to them. And you could tell they really put a lot into it. And I think they shine as the strongest performer in this movie. And they were really the only reason I was kind of compelled to continue on because they were such an interesting character and so well performed. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is like the role of Hedwig is built to be like the main force of the movie. It is all about Hedwig. And I think he gives a very good performance that gives life to that, because if you're not as talented as he is and as devoted to the character, then it's not going to be as successful, since 95% of this movie is Hedwig's show.
Yeah.
So I think like they wrote a huge part and then lived up to it as well. Like the singing talent's great. The performing's great.
Yeah.
It's just a really cool spectacle to watch.
Yeah. And like the supporting cast is pretty good as well. Mm-hmm. I found that their husband was like kind of hit or miss sometimes.
Yeah.
Which again is like Miriam Shore. I know that they have this role played by a woman in both this movie and the shows as well. I thought they were okay. Like, I didn't think that they were the strongest performer in this, but the character of Tommy Gnosis, Michael Pitt, they were pretty good. Like, I thought that they were, especially in that extended stretch of that backstory, that was a very interesting stretch, and it's just because of the interactions between those two. And I think that they were pretty strong.
And with the role of Yitzhak, like, it is created to be someone who is supposed to intentionally not do much.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be like a boring kind of like anchor for Hedwig, who's also treated poorly by them, and shows signs of wanting to do more. Like, he wants to wear the wig of Hedwig and have like a bigger performance role, but she cuts him down from that. And that is a fun character, but it's not going to translate perfectly well into like a really enjoyable character in a movie. And I think even in a stage show, you can't base much around that, other than like there's the gag of, you know, he's here, he wants to wear the wig. At the end of the performance, he will get that wig. You better believe it.
Yeah.
But in between, the joke is that he doesn't do much. So that's a difficult character to make be that interesting, other than the initial joke of it.
Yeah. Did you find any of the songs like stood out as like anything good in particular or anything bad in particular? Because they all kind of blended together for me after a while.
Now, I don't think this is on the songs themselves, but the genre of music in this rock opera is one of my least favorite.
I
find like classic rock so boring, and a lot of it is just so ignorable, but they do write really cool bits for it. They just don't get the attention that they deserve, because the mix kind of just focuses so heavily on the vocals that the individual musical parts don't come through that great. And it's annoying, because these songs could have been cooler.
Like,
especially hearing on the, like, that short DACA that I watched.
Right.
The guy who wrote it, whose name I don't remember, and I'm not going to bother looking up.
John Cameron Mitchell?
No, he didn't write the music.
Was he not? Oh, no. Wow. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Person who did write it wrote really interesting music bits. It just didn't come through. Like, he was going over what influenced what some of the, like, the sonic decisions were in the songs, and then it just kind of blends together in the mix. Yeah.
That's kind of lame and sad. But I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, with this movie too, like, a lot of the focus is on Hedwig and their vocals. And I think that could, it's easy to see that the musicality of it would get dropped to the wayside. And what you really remember from the scenes of the music is not necessarily the songs themselves, because I found they all kind of blended together. It was their performance and what they were interacting with in this specific area. Like, the one scene that really stands out to me that I kind of remember was that sugar daddy scene where they're walking around the restaurant and it ends in that kind of fight. But that's kind of the only one that I could really point out and say, like, oh yeah, I remember that one more vividly, but I don't really remember any of the music. And I'm not necessarily like that motivated to go back and listen to it either, which is kind of a contrast to some other musicals where you listen to the song and you leave kind of on a high and you want to listen to the music independently of the musical. I didn't have that experience with this, but that might just be because we're watching it on like a movie scale, whereas if I saw it live in performance, it might have a different impact, because I'm sure these songs play really well on stage.
Yeah. I mean, like, when I left Jesus Christ Superstar, all I wanted to do was re-listen to the songs. It's banger after banger.
Exactly.
Honestly, the part I care the least about is like the actual story.
Yeah.
Those songs are smoking.
Yeah.
And like, this one does have some fun moments. Like when they drop the side of the trailer and they're doing the song about different women's styles. Yeah. I don't remember the story parts of that, but I thought that was a cool show, especially with the drummer with that little mini drum kit hanging on his chest. I thought that was adorable. I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, the real strength of this movie is John Cameron Mitchell and the performance of Hedwig.
Yeah.
I think that is kind of the driving force of my enjoyment, and I think of this whole movie, because they clearly put a lot of effort into this performance, and that really shows, and they really put a lot of emotion into this character. And I think that without that, this movie would be super forgettable because Hedwig is such an interesting and well-acted character.
Yeah. And there's not that many other characters who have lines in the first place, really. It feels a lot like a really long Hedwig, monologue.
Yeah.
And then there's music interspersed, and then like Hedwig has a manager who gets four lines, and then that's most of the movie.
Yeah.
That's most of the speaking roles.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Chip, well, I mean, this is one of those movies where I don't really have a lot to say about it. It's just like, it's kind of, I don't want to be mean, but it's kind of mid in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty forgettable. I just like, I wish I had more to love about it. And I just really want to see it on stage. But do you want to hear what other people thought?
Let's hear what other people thought about it.
Rotten Tomatoes, it's actually quite high. Critics gave it a 92%.
Damn.
Audiences, 93%. So pretty high scores and in agreement, which is quite interesting. IMDb 7.7 and Metacritic 85. So pretty high critic scores, which I think is ultimately what led it to being part of this schedule because of how well reviewed this piece was. But on a budget of $6 million, it only made 3.6. So I think that kind of spells a story there where it's a kind of an indie film. Not a big budget, not a good amount of marketing. The people that probably saw it were probably the people that wanted to see it and were looking out for it and wanted to love it because they already loved the Off-Broadway musical. So I feel like there's kind of like, it's kind of a crowd of enablers.
Yeah.
And so I feel like this could easily have been so high because the people that saw it, which weren't very many, were just the people that love it. Mm-hmm. Already. So yeah.
And it also, as you said, with the release date, this did have the 9/12 effect.
Yes, exactly.
Coming right after 9/11. Yeah. That can't have helped the box office at all.
No, but then I also don't know if this would have had that much appeal otherwise. Because first of all, like, this is 21 years ago we're talking about now. And I don't know if something like this would have necessarily had such broad appeal.
No.
And which sucks for the time, but like also, this is such a confusing thing to pitch because like you say Hedwig and the Angry Inch, like what even is that? What does that even mean?
Did you mean itch?
Yeah, exactly. Like we thought. Yeah. And so I could see a lot of people not really knowing what this is and it also not having a huge marketing budget because it's super indie. So like the awareness wasn't there. I feel like there was a perfect storm there for just people not seeing this movie.
Yeah. I mean, to quote Tobias Fumke from Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to blame it all on 9/11, but it certainly didn't help.
No, not at all. As for ranking for the year, it's too low to tell. So yeah.
By a lot.
But more importantly, what did we think of this movie, Jason? What are our scores?
Well, Kyle, I don't know. You got to tell me, what was your enjoyment of this?
I gave this a 3.5. Pretty mid enjoyment. I think it's not like I couldn't go as far as 4, but I did have a good time with it for the most part. I just think it was okay. And I think 3.5 feels like a natural fit. So
yeah. I give this 2.5. I've said it before. I'll say it one more time. I don't think this was a movie that serviced it very well, and it probably was a better stage show.
Probably.
And that's all I got for that. What's your craft?
I also gave this a 3.5. I actually think they did really well with the locations and the costumes were great. I think it kind of painted the picture of this character at this point in their life. And I really liked some of the kind of experimental bits, especially with like the Luther bit and the animation bits were really cool. Overall, though, like some of the craft was just like, okay. And it's just like those were kind of shining moments. So yeah, 3.5.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they did really well on a limited budget. But I don't think they blew me away with how much they overcame that. It was still a product of the resources that they had.
Totally.
Execution.
Again, I'm giving this a 3.5. I think John Cameron Mitchell is elevating this a lot. The character of Hedwig is really kind of the propulsion through the movie. Everything else around it, though, is not necessarily that interesting. And the story itself is like, okay, it just didn't keep me that interested the whole time. And so I think a 3.5 is pretty fine. Yeah.
Yep. I agree with that. There is the part where Hedwig's doing things and then there's the rest of the movie and there is a clear divide between the two.
Yeah.
And what is your rewatchability?
I gave this a 3. I could see myself rewatching this. I'm just not really driven to watch the movie. I'm more interested in watching the stage show. And so I can't really give it lower than a 3 because I feel like anything lower than that, I would be like, I don't want to rewatch this, but I could see myself rewatching this. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, that's fair. I'm giving this a 2.5.
Okay.
I don't really want to watch the movie again, but like I would be interested in watching the show if it came through or if like a local troop did it. I'd be into that.
That would be cool.
Well, that is going to bring your score to a 13.5 out of 20 for a 68%.
Yep.
And that's going to bring me to a 12 out of 20 for a 60%. In terms of ranking, Kyle, do you want to hear your ranking?
I do want to hear my ranking.
Well, you have Lord of the Rings, Donnie Darko, Memento, Royal Tenenbaum, Shrek, Training Day, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Sexy Beast, The Others, Black Hawk Down, Mulholland Drive, Spy Kids, Monsters Ball, Gosford Park, In the Bedroom, and Ghost World. Kyle, where are you putting Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
I'm putting this at my new number 13 under Mulholland Drive over Spy Kids.
Interesting. I am going to do the same in terms of ranking, so it's going to go between Mulholland Drive and Spy Kids, but that's going to make it my new number 14. Which is going to bring me to Lord of the Rings, Donnie Darko, Royal Tenenbaum, Shrek, Training Day, Memento, The Others, Sexy Beast, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, Black Hawk Down, In the Bedroom, Mulholland Drive, Hedwig, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World, and Monsters Ball.
Nice. Yeah. I think that's fair. I don't think it could really got that much higher, which kind of sucks. But,
yeah, well, what are the good people of Letterboxd saying about this film?
Oh, God, not much. Fucking hell. This was a barren wasteland of a Letterboxd review. Probably the worst I've seen, actually. I dug for like half an hour and I could not find anything except for one. And it was like the low hanging fruit that I was looking for. So here we go. 3.5 by Ty. Harry Potter's owl has quite the story and can sing. It was a real hoot. I was looking for a Harry Potter related one. That was the only one. And other than that, just a bad Letterboxd.
Even then, Ty, you piece of shit. You're going to go for that? You think that's good comedy? Oh, I get it. Its name is Hedwig, like the owl. That's real good comedy there. Yeah, you went for the, you went swinging on that one, Ty.
I mean, they said a real hoot, so you know.
You know what would be a real hoot?
Yeah, I mean, if you have some comedic things to say about this movie, Letterboxd is like open season. Like you could just get in there and get the top rated one easy.
And then go send Ty hate mail.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Academy Awards. Did it?
No, I doubt it.
Yeah, it didn't. It didn't get any Academy Awards. I could see original song if there was original songs.
Yeah.
But in this case, there was no original songs. And they didn't do the thing where some musicals do nowadays where they're for adapting a musical. They'll create an original song just for the movie. And they play it in the end credits. It's such bullshit. But like they do it. And I think they could have done it for this, but they didn't. And so that was kind of the only place other than maybe John Cameron Mitchell, who was a great performer, and I could see them getting a nomination for that, but that's about it.
The Academy needs to make like an adapted song category, and not a serious one, but just like a come on, we need that in there so we can squeeze some real songs into there without that bullshit credit.
But the Golden Globes did nominate John Cameron Mitchell for Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture, Comedy, or Musical. So they did get some nominee there. I just think this was largely underseen because it was quite indie. It did get nominated for 5 Film Independent Spirit Awards. Also no wins though. Best Feature, Best Director, Best First Screenplay, Best Male Lead, and Best Cinematography. So yeah.
And honestly, I think just getting nominated for a Golden Globe, probably the shining feather in the cap of this movie and all you could ask for.
Yeah. I'm considering John Cameron Mitchell for the end of the year, but also I don't think they're better than Denzel yet. Like,
no.
I feel like that's still too strong competition. Mm. And I don't know necessarily if there's anything that I would want to boot out just yet.
Well, the thing is, I think John Cameron Mitchell could be a police officer, but could Denzel Washington be a drag queen?
Yes. Denzel could do whatever. I believe in Denzel.
You're probably right.
All right. Just get into interesting facts. We're kind of breezing through this episode. Yeah. It's a little bit of a shorter one, but it doesn't matter.
I mean, this is the Angry Inch of our episodes in terms of penis length. Please go in. What's the interesting facts?
All right, so Yiska is seeing wearing a Rent sweatshirt and later decides to audition for the role of Angel in Rent 2005. In real life, John Cameron Mitchell was originally offered the role of Angel, but had to turn it down because they were doing Hedwig.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Before it was a film and a musical at the Jane Street Theater, John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask created the character Hedwig. Mitchell donned drag for the first time, speaking in character and telling Hedwig's stories between song, written and played by Stephen Trask. That might be who wrote them in the documentary.
That sounds right.
Okay.
Sure.
This was the first drag performance art that had a storyline, live singing, and a live band with original material.
That's interesting. That's the start of a genre there.
Yeah.
That is trailblazing. You gotta give it that.
The car wash gag in the Sugar Daddy number was a choreographic artifact from the original show. During the show's original run, there was a designated car wash chair, and celebrity audience members would be placed there. At the 2014 Tony Awards, Neil Patrick Harris reenacted this scene with Orlando Bloom.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, well, you probably could. It's probably online. The footage of Hedwig on The Rosie O'Donnell Show from 1996 was shot when Hedwig and the Angry Inch was just an off-Broadway musical as a promotion for the live show. When Rosie O'Donnell holds up the Hedwig CD, it is a copy of the original off-Broadway cast recording. Oh. So they just use real footage.
Oh, good for them. Yeah. Might as well. I mean, you got a small budget. You got to use what you can, baby. Yeah.
Although this is not clear in the movie, in the musical, Hedwig describes how she agreed to marry Yitzka, a Jewish drag queen from Zagreb, Croatia, only after extracting a promise from him to never do drag again. Hedwig seems to be afraid of Yitzka becoming more feminine than she and paid more attention to, and Yitzka bitterly resents Hedwig's treatment of him. To further the musical's themes of blurred gender lines, Yitzka is always played by a woman. So yeah, that definitely did not come through in the movie, but no. More in the musical, which is interesting because that seems like a character drama moment that you would want in the movie.
Yes.
But
culminating in the quitting to go be in Rent, but yeah. That doesn't quite happen.
Well, and like when they go on stage and put on the wig and yeah. Then they fall into the stage and track, like that's a great spot. But yeah, anyways, lastly, John Cameron Mitchell was required to wear so much makeup for such long periods of time that after his daily lunch break, he'd go to his trailer, shave off his growing 5 o'clock shadow through the makeup, then have to go get his makeup touched up and return to shooting. So
those poor razors. Yeah, you could just a quick baby wipe before then to save you some.
Oh well. But any final thoughts on Hedwig and Their Angry Inch?
The documentary I was referencing is called Whether You Like It or Not, The Story of Hedwig, directed by Laura Nix.
Okay.
Interesting. If you're into the story, give that a watch. They got some fun behind the scenes and stuff, but that's probably all I got otherwise.
Yeah, I might check that out. If the show comes here, definitely going to watch that. But would I recommend this to people? I don't know. It's like, okay. I feel like if you're interested in this sort of thing, maybe.
There's particular people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Nope. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 3, episode 18 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Hedwig and the Angry Inch or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter and Jesus is at Whitney_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
This is Amelie. With the discovery of a simple childhood treasure, she begins a quest to fix other people's lives. And perhaps her own as well.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Amelie. So make sure to watch it before next episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.
You had to slow it down there.